noticed meeting. So we talked about what we're working on. There is no opportunity for public comment. So if you thought that, I'm sorry. This is not a meeting that has an agenda that public comment is included in. So we'll go ahead and I'm Steve Stewart. I'm the county commissioner.
Tom Milken, county commissioner.
David Medora, county commissioner.
Mary?
Mayor. Oh.
Yes,
Mary Kelts, Clark County Public Information.
In the back corner.
Mark Yasway, finance director.
I'm Glenn Olson. I'm the deputy.
Glenn.
Olson.
Thank you.
I'm Axel Swanson. I'm staff of the board.
Bill Wright, transportation.
Sir?
Dewey.
Brenda Warren?
Yeah, Pauline Warren.
Ma'am?
I'm Brenda Seaman.
Eric Kidlow with Bill Columbia.
Ron Goodman, citizen.
Thank you all for being here today. So we have old business on our agenda. First is the DES department head hiring. This is one that I've brought. We hadn't, I had a good meeting with Don Benton this morning, and we talked about kind of, you know, the shared success and wanting to make sure that we're all working towards shared success. And what I realized was that I need more information about what success looks like. I think it's fair to say that the job description as it existed no longer exists, that there is a new job description that you gentlemen were looking for, and that Mr. Benton will fill. So the question I have is, how do we actually determine what success looks like? Is there a job description that can be updated? Is there, I as someone who needs to be able to monitor, are we having success, or is Don successful in his job? I need to know what does success look like. And so I'm not sure if you guys have thought about that at all. I know that you had ideas, Commissioner, that you would put forward in an amended job description, whether you wanted to kind of complete that work or how we might be able to do that, because I think it's fair to say you were looking for something new and different. I mean, is that fair to say?
Well, I shared mine by emailing it, and Bill shared his feedback that said, yep, sounds great. So if you want to be able to add to that or modify that, you're welcome. I invite that. I think it'd be great.
I know that from the very beginning we were recognizing that we already had expertise on hand. We were looking for a leadership position, a management position to tie those two entities together, solid waste and environmental services and stormwater all together. The job description, the timing of it was just bad. We had talked about it, didn't follow through with it. I don't think there was 5 words that was removed or changed. I'm going by memory. But our intent was for leadership. As to how we measured, I think we're going to measure it as to how well that team comes together. Working conditions and relationships between everybody down there, and I think that's something that we would probably feed up to us to recognize whether we have a problem or not. He's brighter, sharper on environmental issues than I thought already, and that I guess that I have to attribute that to relationship dealing with those probably before they come before us here. So I think that it be like any other position, any other department. Success is going to depend upon the outcome. So I think it'd be good.
Well, and I think that, I mean, just for my purposes, for us to all be on the same page, it would be really helpful for me to see what is it that is new and different that you were seeking and that you found in Don that we can then all be on the same page with. This is what we have. This is what we're seeking. This is what success looks like in the qualities that we need in that leader, and just moving forward that we're all on the same page with that. I would very much appreciate getting that information.
I have to give staff credit for what we have today, of course.
No, of course.
And it was really good, the working relationship and the goal. And I think part of that came from what Bill did prior to mm-hmm. when we reached out to staff and said, are we on the right track? Are we going in the right direction? And I think that's what that report was that we had today. And it sounded more like, I really appreciate the way they brought that together today as environment or stormwater 101.
Right.
And they come back and they kind of said, oh yeah, here's our state regulations. And here where we are, and our permit is the permit of the county, and the county submits their plan to coordinate with the regulation of the state.
Right.
And staff put that together, and it was
good.
Really put together, because it really grounded everything as to what we were going to do and how we're going to get there. So
did it grow?
It went really good, and I went to staff. Jane, was that her name?
Yeah.
She's the one that put it together. So I thank her and Ron. That there is a great presentation.
Cool. So can we get that? I mean, I look to you, Commissioner, because you're the one who kind of put together your thoughts on qualifications, on the new qualifications that you thought we really needed in that position. And I got to know what the expectations are. You know, as someone, what's it?
I didn't mean what I said early on that we were looking for a leadership management position. Okay.
The only ones I saw written were from Commissioner Medora. I'm sorry.
I invite you, if you have different ideas or you have your own input, to go ahead and submit that as well.
We already hired someone, so I want to know how we judge this person that you guys hired. Me creating something Okay, so me creating something though doesn't get me to, all right, we have a person in there. Now, how do we actually judge performance? How do we actually, what are the standards that person is fulfilling so that I can know this is what success looks like? I mean, every employee, every employee has a job, and that's what I need to know. What is the job, and what, how do we actually make sure that he's meeting and exceeding expectations? Because his boss is going to be asked to review him. By what standard? So that's what I'm saying. I need those standards. And so will ultimately the county administrator, who has to do the job performance evaluations for that person. So that's what I'm asking for. And me doing it, I'm not the one who thought it up and that came up with this. So I'm just trying to get up to speed here.
We have an evaluation. Bill has an evaluation process that he manages all bank managers.
Yep.
And I guess that's where we start.
It is, but he's got to have something to measure him against.
He measures against the success of meeting the requirements of the state and putting together a plan with that staff. And I believe that's the only way we measure it, is our success of doing that business, the smoothness of the operation. And that's the same that we do with every department that we have here. We wouldn't do this any different than any other department.
Exactly. And every other department head and has a job description and has...
Well, we have one.
But it was in flux. So I'm just trying to get it locked down and so that we are all on the same page with that.
So, Bill, do we have that finished? The job description of a DEF director? Okay.
Do we have it finished as it's amended by the commission?
I have in...
Because the old one was pulled because it was not deemed to be the correct job description.
What I presumed I was to do was to put what Commissioner Medora, the traits, he did not call it a job description, he called the traits of the person who should fill the position. I put those traits in a draft form into the existing job description. Or some of them are already there.
Do you remember off the top of your head what they were? I remember maybe five.
I can get it.
As long as we can get them. I mean, I don't want to take up all that. I just was making sure that it's moving forward, that we're all on the same page.
I'll circulate that so you can look at it.
And the only
you haven't seen it yet, I just did it.
So. Well, and the only other thing that I know of that has been unresolved as far as that is expectations associated with kind of the political nature of Don's work in the Senate, and how I've had questions asked as far as, okay, well, what if there is something he's going to be voting on that has a specific impact to Clark County? Does he recuse himself from a vote in the Senate based on that? And I don't know the answer.
I hope not.
No, I mean,
I think it's in the air. I think, number one, we come first. Mm-hmm. If there's something up there that he has the ability to put himself on a more environmental committee that would educate him more, and then he would see any issue that we have here, that he could go up there firsthand and say, we have an issue with this, I'd like to see if we could address this, and he could to have staff work on that stuff. If it works.
If I may, just to help you with that, Commissioner Medora received an email from a constituent that was copied to Brad Owen, the Lieutenant Governor, asking him specifically as President of the Senate certain questions about the ability of Senator Benton to, with his new capacity, to do that. Commissioner Madour asked Bronson Potter to review the email and address the response. So Bronson,
Bronson comes up later.
We might want to ask him about that, what he's doing. And Bronson said, before I consider my response, I'd like direction from the board to do so. So he'll be asking me to do that.
Well, I would just assume that we would do the responsible thing and, of course, ask him to go ahead and respond to that as he, just to make sure those bases are covered. So, you all good with that?
What are you talking about?
There is a citizen that said we'll make sure that there's no problems with the dual role that he plays. So the natural thing would be
we'll
let the prosecuting attorney answer those questions.
We are a citizen legislator made up of everybody. So
sure. So
teachers,
we might
firemen.
He'll be here.
And the question is, like, is a teacher? Is a teacher
one
accused
county
of
commissioner? We have.
Okay.
No problem.
So we'll get info on that then. Good. That's all I had on that. Invocation guidelines. Is Kelly?
He's not here.
Kelly's not here. And I know that.
Where are we at?
I've been trying to catch up with him and follow him along that way.
Okay.
We had some outside help to put it together, but Kelly has got all the information, so I don't have a whole lot to share.
We have a list, and we've approved
the
list.
Yeah, we have a list. And
we didn't really do a letter, but we've done a list.
We were trying to put something in writing so we all understood what we want. And I thought we were there.
I don't know how much more we need to do, really.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of submitting, and it was just basically recognizing all the different religions that we have in Clark County, and that we want to make sure that they're all invited to do that. I've had a couple people contact me, and I said, great, let's get together. We'll put together with Kelly Sills and have this list and make sure everybody's invited to participate.
Do you have something you want to add, Commissioner?
We have guidelines. We have guidelines as of, we're not there to be political or impugn one another.
Right.
I think the H drive contains the information that has already been compiled and put in there, and we need to be able to have the time to focus on that. So that's on my to-do list. I assume it's each of yours as well.
Cool. We'll come back on that then. Freeholder resolution.
Freeholders on it. The latest thing I'm doing is contacting other elected officials that may have some concern. We kind of had an email trade back and forth. We emailed out some of the information that we had that might have been concerned. We've got as much information as any
tons.
All initiative things that were put out there, the ones that failed, the ones that were successful. Mm-hmm. We've looked at all the different our charter counties and how they differ and how they're formed, and they're half of them are one way and half of the other. But the good thing was on the initiative and referendum that they put out there, people, you have to have faith in the people, because when you look at them, all the radical things left or right
went down,
fell off, you know. So you have to have, the people do make good choices.
I'll be honest, I think we have as much information as we're ever going to get. I mean, for me, the next step is going to public hearing. I mean, and I'm I'm ready to go to public hearing.
I put the draft out there, and I think we have some dates. Good. What we had to do, I contacted election people because I was concerned, because this week is when the candidates sign up.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have a deadline of August 6th in which to do this. Uh-huh. We have to go backwards because we have to give our elections office time to allow people to get a photograph and submit a photograph and maybe a statement as to who they are. And one of the things that I hadn't discussed with somebody was, would you want a political affiliation identified or nonpartisan?
For the freeholders.
For the freeholders.
I got you.
So, and I don't have an answer to that.
So working backwards from that date, it sounds like we need to get on it pretty quick.
Yeah, because in respect to our elections office, it seems like whenever we do the resolution, and if we pass that resolution, you have to have a week or two, I would think, before you would open it up. Because people have to think about a week or two before they think if they want to become a freeholder.
Yeah.
And then they have to go down and sign up. So that'd be about 2 weeks after that. Obviously, I think that we'll do that before August 6th, which is good. And then that gives the time for the elections people. And then what we do, we actually put in that resolution,
right,
the actual filing date.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gone that far and worked with the election office.
So can we direct staff then? It seems like we should direct staff to put a timeline together then, as far as working backwards from August, that August date, to when we need to have a hearing.
That's where we are right now.
Good. Okay. So is Kelly going to come back with a hearing?
I expect to see it within 2 weeks.
Good. Excellent.
So what's the outcome from that?
Kelly's going to come back to us with a timeline that has a hearing date.
We're putting all the timelines on the resolution so that it's well spelled out.
So basically we're doing some homework.
Yes.
Are we getting ready to set the hearing date?
Yes.
Good.
And whether or not it would be a partisan or nonpartisan identification of the freeholders.
If I remember last time, it was nonpartisan.
Okay.
So we're not making a commitment at this point.
No.
We're basically doing homework to...
Yeah. If we go
consider the timeline.
But they're going to come back to with a hearing date, right?
Okay.
Kelly is? As far as when we would need to do it?
Yeah.
Good.
And we're working backwards from that date.
So we are not scheduling a hearing.
Today.
We are looking at the what's involved, considering the roadmap ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And the hearing would be to pass this resolution or not.
The hearing, exactly.
Calling for a vote.
Right. That's my draft. You got it.
Yeah.
But mine isn't that thick.
I made a bunch of copies. Okay. All right. So we'll come back with a hearing date for that. And then we'll talk that through and said whether what we do with that. Good.
Well, we're not setting a hearing date. We're looking at a schedule.
He's coming back with a potential hearing date. It's like working backwards. This is when you'd have to do it.
I want to have it complete.
I'm ready to go to hearing, though. I mean, whenever we get to that. So.
Okay.
All right, CRC ballot measure and election time frames. Were we going to have legal for this bill, or what's...
I just kept it on there from last week.
Oh, okay. Do we have any update as far as time frames on that?
Actually, that may be academic, because next week, CTRAN, we're going to be voting on this
right,
to determine whether or not we withdraw support mm-hmm. for it. So I would think that we ought to find out how that goes and then take it from there.
Yeah, true. Okay, so we'll come back. That's Tuesday night of next week, so we'll know next Wednesday.
Yeah, in other words, if it gets abandoned already,
right,
then why would we have a vote on it? If it, I assume that if that dies, that you don't have to kill it twice, right? But if somehow it still stays alive, we want to make sure we don't miss the opportunity, because if that's still alive, people want a vote, and we want to make sure that we grant them that vote.
And that's same timeline as far as August 6th for us.
Everything has to be done by August
6th. Okay.
I was troubled thinking that we as a CTRAN board have lost control of locally preferred alternative. And I think you remember what I expressed my feeling was, while we haven't given up on a crossing, that maybe we might consider something different. And I got the impression from WADOT that, you know, what's there is there. And I mean, we don't have a choice. It's either up or down vote. And she said, yeah, that's what we're down to. CTRAN board, and we would have the ability to alter or change the locally preferred alternative. And my understanding, my disappointment, is we only get to vote yes or no.
Well, you can consider whatever you want, but you have to have partners to actually do a project.
Well, yeah, we go back to the partners and say, hey,
they said that.
And since 2008, lots of
they
things
said if
have
you
failed.
Can get all of the other partners to agree to a change, then change the LPA.
Yeah, but you kind of told me, right there from everybody else, that are not likely going to happen.
I agree.
And so next week we got to vote.
I don't know. That's
because I think that no matter how you look at it, I think there's a lot of people there wanting cross.
I know.
Whether it's there or someplace else, we're the option of still having the crossing and still investing $170 million dollars.
Apparently the answer is not that clear. Otherwise, the CRC staff would have answered the question, do you recognize the authority of the project sponsors? You would think they would say yes. do the project sponsors still have the freedom to withdraw support from this project? Would you acknowledge that? You would think the answer would be yes. They didn't answer that.
I thought they did answer that we could withdraw support.
No,
that's a different question than can you change or have a different LPA.
I'm just trying to keep it alive.
Yeah, I understand.
I specifically submitted both of those, several questions regarding that. Mm-hmm. They did not answer those questions. It said in process. And I would think that they would answer those questions. So, in fact, Jeff Hamm said they would be answered at that meeting last night. They weren't. So hopefully we'll get a real answer from those questions, because as project sponsors, are there any other elected officials besides RTC and CTRAN? Aren't all the others either bureaucrats or appointed? In other words, who answers to the people?
RTC is an oversight committee.
It's project sponsors.
Oversight committee of CTRAN.
RTC? No. It's an independent, it's a project sponsor on its own as the Regional Transportation Planning Organization.
Oh, because when I asked them to consider a vote, they said they didn't have authority to do that.
I don't remember the legal reasoning behind that, but
okay. Anyway.
It's something about they didn't have taxing authority or something. I forget. Their
track record already does not acknowledge the authority or the oversight ability of the project sponsors. They not only did we not have a voice in their substantial changes that they submitted in December, they did not even inform us. You know, I'm talking about what I handed out last night, how they made substantial changes. They took all of the highway improvements away.
They didn't. I mean, they explained it really poorly last night, I thought, but I mean...
Let me finish.
You thought you'd stop. Okay, go ahead.
No, I thought
you stopped too. You did pause.
I'm
not
done.
They took all the highway improvements away and left only what is needed for light rail. And they call that phase one. And 100% of the funding only applies to phase one. Everything else, the four interchanges that they took away, the SR-500 improvements, it's all of those we are left hanging, holding the bag for. There is no funding from the feds, not from the FTA, not from the Federal Highway Administration. That was why I asked them twice, did I hear you just say? And they did clarify that last night. I thought, I was dumbfounded. There is no phase two that includes any federal funding.
You done?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So I thought that they actually did a pretty poor job of explaining it. But as I have come to understand it through multiple explanations and reading the documentation, number one, the LPA that was agreed to that includes all of the interchanges is still the same. It has not been changed by anything. That the grant application, the Federal Transit Administration grants application, had a smaller window of project components to help them score better for Federal Transit Administration funding. And if you look at the full funding pieces that are in that document, in that grant application, it doesn't have the full amount from the feds, from FHWA. It doesn't have the full amount, the full $400 million that's been promised from Federal Highways. It doesn't have our state's full funding. It doesn't have full funding total, because they have said, okay, well, here's a narrow, this is what it would take to implement your piece, FTA, and FTA's piece is only the light rail. That's what they're funding, is the $850 million for the light rail. So they're saying, to get that money and help us compete best for it, here's a grant application to show it. But nothing that they have done in that has changed the overall project envelope or the responsibilities of all the parties to pay for the different project components. Now, they did a cruddy job of explaining that last night. And it may be that there is more to it than what I'm understanding. But that is what I understand based on the project,
and this application that specifically went into the FTA, not to FHWA and FTA, but just to the transit administrator.
That's where I thought that they had trouble. All of a sudden, they were pulling that out, and all the funding that they were really talking about was for light rail.
And that's the way, and in that report, if you look at that report in a vacuum, and there's nothing else surrounding it, then that's what it looks like.
But they were still connected, which was confusing.
I agree.
I don't mean to use the word confusing there.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
What really stands out is that it's still the CRC, Columbia River Crossing Project.
Yeah.
And the project itself has been changed.
But the overall project has not.
But the light rail hasn't been, except the
North. But that's the point, is the overall project has not been changed. They are only showing a piece of the project to the Federal Transit Administration to help them score better for a grant out, you know, for the full funding grant.
So
that is, you know, my understanding based on conversations I've actually had with them to follow up when I saw what was really a disturbing document.
So we're going to bring this back.
Let me address that. That grant application included, it wasn't just simply the some kind of a report that just to simply get the money from the FTA. That was, and it's called the finance plan for this project. It is the finance plan for this project, and it includes the money coming from both states, it includes the money from the tolls, it includes the money from the Federal Highway Administration in that. I gave away my copy, my last copy today. So before I left the building last night, I got a green light from Jeff Hamm to ensure that if there's any remaining clarification that needs to be brought out, that, yep, we can continue to submit questions and get those answers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I asked that question twice last night for that FTA rep to clearly answer that. And he clearly answered that. He called it 100% funding. That is the funding package. And that included the colors on that map, that was what was covered. And we were left holding the bag for everything else on that map. But if you feel like that's not accurate, then what we need to be able to do is get them to give us in writing,
mm-hmm,
what is the finance plan for phase two.
I agree, and the not mixing and matching the whole phase one, phase two thing. It is the finance plan for the FTA component, and the FTA component is the light rail with match. That is their piece of this puzzle. And so when Rick Crichalis says, this is the finance plan that we see, he's the FTA guy. He's not the FHWA guy. And it didn't have all of the FHWA money contained within it. So he sees the world in a different way. He sees it only from the framework of, these are my projects, and my projects are transit projects. You know, this whole multimodal aspect of it is unique only to this project because of what the feds did to say you can use these other modal monies to match the FTA monies. So it isn't the overall finance plan that is in that document. It is the finance plan associated with the FTA component. But I totally agree with you. Getting clarification is 100% necessary, because if you and I, who spend a lot of time on this, see it differently, then inevitably citizens who we serve are going to see it differently. So we got to get clarification. I totally agree with you.
If you're aware of another finance plan besides what was submitted,
I'd like to see it. They showed it on the overhead. They actually showed you it was a big pie chart, and you kept wanting to go back to something else. It's a big pie chart. And that finance plan has actually been submitted multiple times to multiple agencies.
I'd like to see a copy of it, because when I pointed that out, it did not match the document. They did not have an answer.
It didn't match because this was a finance component only for the FTA portion of it. But I agree they should get us answers.
We'll follow through by getting crystal clear clarification.
Absolutely agree.
Great.
Bad thing. We got 1 week.
I know. Oh, no. It's brutal. I mean, it's, yeah.
But
I agree.
It's pretty basic. They should be able to answer where hundreds of millions of dollars coming from.
Agreed. That should be a basic question they should be able to answer clearly, and it is frustrating when they are not able to or they don't.
I mean, another thing that's frustrating is that we have split legal opinion.
Yeah, no.
And we weren't even going to get that until June. We have an AG opinion.
Yeah.
So what I did hear, that when the FTA makes their decision in October, that they would put a writer on this that would say pending a financial disclosure obligation. Or
yeah, I think they'd have to.
All right. And we have to decide before. So anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So, okay, next. Coeur d'Alene lifeguards. We had a little bit of the conversation before with risk management about this. Capel isn't with us.
I was going to call them when you were ready.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, call them and then we'll come back around to it, if you wouldn't mind, please.
I have some concern about starting to provide lifeguard in one location. And the other day we were both there on the rededication of the steam engine. We went down to Moulton Falls and here's a family down there with a couple little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Not the swimming so much, but along the shoreline, just above the falls, you know. So most of our parks are use at your own risk. I like the idea that we say to the parents, if you forgot your life jacket, we have them here at Klein Lake Park. The responsibility really falls on the parent or the adult who's supposed to be overseeing the children that can or cannot swim. Now, that being said, I remember they were the one that drowned is older.
Maybe like 13, 14 years old, somewhere.
So, but I don't know how we delve into this and put a lifeguard in one place and not the other. And when it comes to legal, that somebody had come back and point back and say, well, if you put it there and you didn't put it here, then I drowned over here, so therefore you recognize the danger.
We've only had lifeguards in one place.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they come back and say, well, you have other hazardous places too.
But that's why Bronson's coming to explain recreational immunity to you.
So he'd be here shortly.
Okay.
So you know, all of our public facilities that are open to the public are use at your own risk.
Primarily, yeah. Yeah. But they can, so let's wait until Bronson gets up and he can explain that piece, and Pete can help us as far as other impacts or how
he has a proposal for the cost.
Okay. EDO, that's the pass-through dollars for the economic development function. I went ahead and had the conversations with EDC about, you know, that we want to make sure that we have a seat at the table and that we're part of that. Their executive board signed off on that. They are going to ratify it tomorrow at their full board meeting. There shouldn't be any hiccups with that. I've been told by their board chair, every expectation is that they just want to let the board know and want to, you know, get it ratified by them. But so long as they go ahead and ratify it, I'm going to go ahead and do what my part of it was, which is to make sure and sign the form and get it to the state, and so that we don't lose funding for this area.
So we've asked for a seat on the board and a seat on the executive.
Mm-hmm. Yep, on both boards.
Make sure I understand correctly. There's only one candidate that could qualify, and there's no way that we could come up with any other candidate for these state funds.
Not in this biennial time frame, which is what we are signing off on. That's correct.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Great.
I'm good with that.
Excellent.
That'd be good. I like the idea of having whatever relationship with them, be able to have two-way conversations. It just helps close the communication gap.
It also addresses the concerns of why we didn't get to pay the dues.
There's our plan. It's good. All right. Thank you. Pete's here. We're still waiting for
Bronson
is on his way. County administrator recruitment. Has it been 2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. So we said we'd take a couple weeks and start thinking about process. We don't have to make a decision on process today, but I think Bill just wanted to give us a little information to start feeding into our thoughts, and feeding into it so we can get started soon.
Yes. One of the things you asked me to do is to talk about what would a national or a broad regional or more than regional recruitment look like, such as the one that hired me 14 years ago. We normally have the HR department do executive recruitment. They have demurred from this. It's something that's just too large for them to do. So I've asked Francine what would it look like. And what I think I would like to do is, since we have such a packed agenda today, and since we're running so late, is to give you a 2-minute overview of what that looks like, and then come back and have Francine come and present that next week, because I feel a bit uncomfortable replacing my position, and I want it to be as objective as possible, and I do want it to be a process. We've had two recent recruitments this large. City of Camas recruited their city manager using a firm called Waldron. The result, what they do, and I'd like Francine to explain that to you in detail. It's a very detailed process. They sit down with the board of commissioners. They find out what you want in an administrator. I know that they won't be able to fill my shoes, but they give you the shoe size anyway. That was a fun commission. That cost is about $25,000 to $30,000 to do that. And that includes the travel expense when you finally fly in the finalists to sit before you and interview in the various interview times. RTC, you just approved a similar recruitment for the RTC director. That you agreed with Prothman, the other major recruiting agency, at $18,500 plus the expense of travel, up to not to exceed $30,000. So you're talking about the same kind of thing. The time frame, usually those take about 14 to 16 weeks, which would kind of align, if you did it soon, would align with my departure. The only role that Francine and I talked about that I would play would be simply to manage that contract for you. I would not participate in any interviews or anything like that unless you wanted my input. And basically what happens is they do a profile of the county. They do a profile of the kind of person you want, and then they go out, and that's what they get paid to do. They go out with their contacts, and they draw people in. They advertise, obviously, in different places, but then they draw people in. They interview them and see if, indeed, they are the meet the test that you have put forth, and then they bring the finalists here to the community for interview. And that will be up to you to how many we have. When I came, I interviewed with a community group, which was made up of business leaders and members of not-for-profits. I met with rank-and-file employees. I met with the senior management staff, and I met with the commissioners. So I had four different interview groups that I met with. And that's usually how the process worked. We would do an RFP for the process, Prothman and Waldron being the two, but we would do a process for that. So beginning to end, 14 to 16 weeks. So what I'd like to have Francine to do with that brief overview, I'd like Francine to come next week and more thoroughly brief you on that process. And I can contribute as well, since I've been through a couple of them.
I expressed my concern and not full support of hiring these outside agencies at the sum of $30,000 when we brought that up at RTC. And I just think that our HR has more ability than what we may not be giving them credit for, because we hire some very talented people. And one time before, we asked her hiring process, and maybe that's something she could bring back to us again. Saying, if you did this, how would you do it? Part of my concern was when you said, I forgot the name of the company. Is this a different company than what RTC is?
No.
Well, there's two. One of the two.
They engaged Prothman, the other major firm, yeah. Waldron.
Their process included coming here and asking us what to do.
Yeah. No, they asking, no, not what to do, asking you what traits you wanted in the director.
How would we do it? Yeah. So.
No, who so, he would be like, or
yeah.
She.
Yeah, but I remember when Francine talked about that. She was talking about her outreach program and how she did it. On some of the other replacements, we started locally, and we expanded, and then we expanded, and then we expanded.
Well, one always likes to talk to the one who does the job, and the first question I ask her, can you do this? And she said, no, I don't have the time. If you want me to continue to do the rest of my job and do a thorough job on this. Now, you want her to put stuff aside, we can talk about that.
Okay. So she'll come here next week, and we can ask her more about that as far as process and what her availability involved in or otherwise.
She'll provide us information next week.
Yeah. that good?
Sure.
All right, cool. So we'll get that next week. Thank you, Bill. Let's move back to the Klein Line lifeguards. Since we've got Pete and Bronson here. Gentlemen. I can and I will.
Thank you. I am, for those people that don't have copies, I'm going to walk through this anyway.
And Pete's our public works director.
What had been requested of me was to look at what options and costs would be associated with restoring the lifeguards at Klein Line Pond that were eliminated in 2009 as a result of some general fund expense reductions. So we've not had lifeguards since 2009. We contacted AMR, who does provide that in a couple of locations in open water situations in Oregon. They told us that it would cost $105,000 to provide that. The one thing that they didn't include was the water play feature that's also out there. So it would be in that same amount. Unfortunately, they're locked into their existing sites. They have recruited and trained people, and they could not add Klein Line to their body of work until next year. So they would not be able to do it in 13. We also talked to Vancouver Clark Parks and Rec, because they were the ones we had worked with in the past to provide lifeguards, and they also have lifeguard programs in their swimming pools. They're in the same situation. They've done their training. They've gotten people on board, and they're not in a position to be able to add them this year. So what we have, and one of the things that they had provided us back in October of 12 was a cost of $118,000 to do it this year. And because we have not had the lifeguards out there in the last 4 years, there is some startup costs that would need to be incorporated. So they had looked at $118,000 and then $96,000 a year annually thereafter to be able to do that. But again, with them, they are unable to provide that service in 13. So what I have looked into and what we could do if directed by the board would be to hire temporary certified lifeguards, and including a certified pool operator to do all of the water testing, and then we would need to do the same thing that the city talked about. All of the floats that delineate the three swimming areas need to be replaced. The docks that are used out in the water would need to be reinstalled, the lifeguard stands and all of that sort of stuff, and then training of these new employees. Granted, they would be certified lifeguards. It would be more of, you know, the procedures on site. They already have the necessary skill sets. And the, as has been our past practice when we had lifeguards, they've operated from July 1 through just after Labor Day, or September 2nd in this particular year. 7 days per week, and an operation of 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. And for us, then, the estimated cost to do all of that would be $120,000 out of the general fund. And then if we do that and we continue to provide that service, I would recommend that we relook at the Vancouver Clark Parks and Rec and AMR, and also if this system works, just continuing it in this fashion, if that was so directed by the board. And Bronson's here to answer any questions regarded to any liability, and I can answer any questions as well.
Do we put the docks out there every year?
We have not put the docks out since
2008.
Since 2008, since we've curtailed the lifeguard.
I would think the floating device out there would be a added safety if someone was out there swimming.
Maybe. Also an attractive nuisance,
yes, exactly,
for someone else.
Hit their heads.
So I had a case where a kid swam out to a floating dock.
Didn't make it.
He made it. He didn't make it back.
Didn't make it back. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
It can be a problem. So just on the liability side of things, you know, we don't have a legal duty to provide lifeguards at water bodies. If we do, then we do have a duty that those lifeguards are reasonably trained and do a reasonable job. So by undertaking the task of providing lifeguarding, you are taking on some liability that you don't have otherwise. But does that make sense?
It does. It's kind of backwards from
what
we heard from Mark.
It's counterintuitive. You know, you're...
He was...
Pardon me?
Well, Mark was... I mean, our risk manager was kind of saying the reverse, though, that we'd have less liability if we
put
the lifeguard out there.
I talked to him, and he was saying he was meaning to say it would be safer, but not less liability.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's counterintuitive, I'll give you that, but it makes sense.
You have to bubble the bubble wrap. It's the same thing.
But there is recreational immunity in this state, which provides that if you make an area open to the public free of charge, then you are not liable for ordinary negligence.
We have to host it as such?
No. You don't have to do any particular posting. The only thing that you are, the recreational immunity does not protect you for is if you're grossly negligent or if you do an intentional act, which I don't think would be the case here. It also doesn't protect you from what they call latent conditions. So conditions that you cannot see that are dangerous, that cause harm. In this situation, arguably a condition like that would be a sudden drop off in the bottom of the lake so that you're walking out and then all of a sudden you're over your head. But that's not a lifeguarding issue. That would be there regardless. So I think that even though you may be taking on some additional liability by providing lifeguards when you don't have to, you're going to be protected by the recreational immunity statute.
Well, either way, we're going to be protected, it sounds like. Whether we provided them or not, we're protected by the recreational immunity.
True.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have an extra $120,000.
So the bottom line on this is that our primary role is safety, and I wouldn't expect parents to complain that we have lifeguards out there. Why are you wasting your money on lifeguards? They would be... It is the most proactive thing we can do to protect life. So I would think that we would naturally do that unless there were a compelling reason not to do that, right?
$120,000 from the general fund can pretty much buy us a sheriff's deputy. So if I'm looking at, and that's full-time year-round. So if I get, if I'm looking at what promotes public safety the most, the general fund covers more than just parks, and we're starving parks already. I mean, we're taking $325,000 away from the general fund. We're not starving parks. We're already taking away. Sorry, we're already taking away from the general fund in the tune of $325,000 for this year. Another 120. We have many needs to promote public safety in this community, and needs that we don't have latitude on. I mean, we have to provide deputies. We have to have courts. We have to have a jail.
We just add the commissioner and another judge.
Yeah. So
why would we pull it from the general fund? Don't we have a tax that goes into the metropolitan taxing district? Don't we? Can't we pull from that fund? Isn't that what that fund is for?
No, we fund our deputy,
the general clerk.
For lifeguards.
The general clerk parks district, or greater Clark parks district.
So that the combines...
MPD?
Yes.
Goes for M&O.
Why don't we use the MPD fund to fund lifeguards?
The reason being is that, or it's why I would not recommend, back in 2009 as well, the lifeguards have always been funded out of general fund, and when they've been funded... And we had eliminated that to save the general fund money. At the same time, we have taken all of what were general fund funded parks and we maintain them. If they're inside the district boundary, we maintain them with the GCPD. It was never developed to fund at that level. And so right now, we are actually expending more money to do all of those operations than we have coming in. And so we're spending down the reserve, but this is piling on, if you will, and we could do it for a while, but it's not sustainable. And then we're going to be in a position where we're going to have to cut back on all of our parks in the greater Clark Parks district.
What's the ballpark balance in that account?
It's about $6 million right now.
$6 million?
Yes.
And a reserve we're talking about?
In the greater Clark Parks district.
Oh.
A little bit of history to help explain that is that the levy was created to maintain and operate the 35 parks that were built under the greater Clark Parks district. The levy initially was set at that level, even though, you know, we were starting out with zero parks and we were ramping up. We've built 25 of the 35 parks to date. The intent had been, and I would have to go back, I don't have the date in my mind, but we were going to transfer that reserve to continue the capital program, just to continue building the 10 parks that we promised that we haven't built. We made the decision to defer that because of the decline in the property taxes and the prorationing specifically of the GCPD, which is the most junior taxing district. So right now we're at about $1.7 million in levy versus over $3.1 million, which was the base levy amount before it started ramping back. So we decided to delay using the money to build more parks until we recovered that levy amount, and then we would had hoped to whatever's left that we would be able to continue constructing those parks if presuming that it recovers as the forecasts show it will. And but I am very concerned because we have, even when it's fully recovered, we're doing much more when things are fully built out than what was projected when the levy was created.
Highline's also not a GCPD property. I mean, are we?
It's in the district.
But we have,
it's in the district,
with like Orchards Park, Elida Park, Salmon Creek Trail, all of those ones that reside within the district, we are using district money to maintain and operate them, which was, again, one of those things that we did to try and preserve the general fund. That was not the original concept.
So the question is, do we have the legal authority to use the MPD fund to fund the lifeguards for Clean Life?
I think we do. That was what I was asking about, whether it was it's within the district. The park is within the district.
I'm just concerned that, one, we had hoped to use any reserves for building the promised parks, and secondly, when things get fully built out, it's not sustainable, and we'll be cutting lifeguards again in the future or something else.
So first, the money that isn't in reserve, is that part of the levy that was approved by the voters for the 35 parks?
Yes.
So that money was specifically authorized by the voters,
right,
to help to build, maintain, and operate 35 parks. I forget how many ball fields.
41
ball fields and
seven and a half miles
of trails. That was what the voters authorized it for. So whether or not you can legally do it, the question is, what did the voters say? And the voters said, this is to build a specific number of parks that we told them, these are the parks, these are the fields, these are the trails.
Got some very upset people waiting for parks,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and we've got 10 parks that my commitment is to...
I've got one that's closed, that's got 80 acres of full growth, mm-hmm, I'd love to see opened up north.
Which one?
the one we got from the state.
Oh, the state transfer one, yeah.
Yeah.
But as far as the MPD ones go, we have 10 parks to build, and my commitment is to fulfill the, you know, fulfill the will of the voters. You know, we promised them, those voters. It was a former board, but the voters were promised those parks. They put money aside for those parks, so to redirect, I don't know.
We can legally do it, but I've heard from a lot of people want to know why we stopped construction of those parks.
So next question. Do we have a legal right to use the funds, MPD funds, to build, design and build new parks?
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the things that was in it was that we did not have enough money to build the entire program. We had anticipated the park impact fees would continue to come in and that the money would come before the program was developed, and that didn't happen, so that didn't materialize. But part of that, when we were fully built out, the plan for the park system was that when we were fully built out, the money in the levy would cover all the maintenance costs. Before we're fully built out, there would be an excess amount that could go back into construction, and in fact was programmed for enhancements of some of those parks. And that's the reserve that I'm talking about. But the board's direction to me previously was that we maintain what we have first and then we build. And when it looked like we were not going to have enough money to be able to continue maintenance of the park system, we delayed the transfer of the reserve to capital until we weathered the storm.
So we have approximately $6 million in the balance of that account.
Yeah.
And that is property taxes being levied by our citizens that are paying into that account for operation and maintenance of our parks.
Of the Greater Clark Park.
And lifeguards falls under the category of operation. Right? So it's a valid use.
Except when they voted it in, I'll have to say that the Salmon Creek Klein Line Pond Park was a general fund park. It was never envisioned that it would be paid for by this parks district. It was envisioned that it would continue to be paid for by general fund. But because of the general fund challenges, that was a shift that was made. So sure. That is not one that they necessarily voted for. It's not on the list of 35.
As stewards of the funds that we are now, and knowing that we have a provision that the voters have provided for operation of our parks, and being that at least for this year, we'll simply take 1 year at a time, we can afford to put lifeguards from that fund, don't have to touch the general fund, and potentially save a life. We didn't do it last year.
I have a real concern. I couldn't run the law, my legal on this. My understanding was when we add the lifeguard or took a lifeguard away, then we become more liable, or could be. Someone could come back and say, you had a lifeguard here and you took him away, and my son drowned. Or you now have a lifeguard, so I assume I'm safer, so therefore, and I drown, so therefore I think you're more liable. Mm-hmm. And so it's my understanding when you make that change, you stand up a little bit taller as far as we want or expect it to
be. Yeah, so I don't think you become more liable when you take the lifeguard away, and that's what I say before, is that's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
I think you do potentially become more liable when you add the lifeguard, because now you are exposed to potential negligence suits for failure to properly lifeguard. But again, I think that recreational immunity statute that I talked about is going to shield you from those claims.
One of the things I get, I believe we might prevail.
Yeah.
But it might cost a few hundred thousand dollars to defend ourselves. And so if the general public thinks that you made an error, regardless of what they think they may have weighed, they can still sue you.
That's true.
Certainly the risk and the liability is one of the factors. but it's not the primary factor. The primary factor is to serve citizens. This is an opportunity for us to foresee that somebody could drown in that lake just like they did last year without lifeguards. And the potential saving of a life is a higher priority. Yes, we have to consider would we get sued or this way or that way, but our risk manager today advised us that it would be a good thing for us to be able to cover lifeguards. And I would think that surely if you got kids that are swimming in that lake, it's going to be safer with lifeguards. At least you got somebody watching in comparison to somebody that they're out there and nobody's watching. Diligent parents watch their kids, but not every parent is going to watch every kid and be as diligent as some.
I've got three other locations, obvious locations, out in North Carolina that are probably just as hazardous, if not more so.
Well,
no lifeguards.
We've never had lifeguards.
Whether you call it a swimming area or not, the place is.
But someone might drown there. I mean.
Well, to keep it simple,
full of people.
We are keeping it simple.
The only reason that we took away lifeguards in the first place from Kleinlein, which we used to provide, is to save money. And it used to pull from the general fund. The general fund problem has been solved. We've got an account that is available to use for the operation of Kleinlein. And we have the opportunity, at no cost to the general fund, to put lifeguards out there. I would think that we would do that. How would we feel if we said, well, we're going to try to save $100,000+ because we're going to try to build another park over here, and then we get a report that somebody drowned in that lake? Why? How would you feel? This is a foreseeable high risk.
And I felt terrible when someone died. Like, when, no, we're not. You are.
I am only focusing on.
You are focusing on them. What we're saying is that I felt bad when, I mean, I felt horrible when someone actually drowned at the slough at Frenchman's Bar and drowned there. It was horrible. But the question is, you know, there's a difference between feeling horrible and. And trying to focus in on it one specific spot and saying, well, we'll save a person there. What about these other places?
Yeah, and one more. I've heard a lot of people. And you heard the other day at the hearing when they even thought that we were misusing their parks money or gifting land away. They're waiting for their park. They agreed to be taxed to build these parks. And we delayed them. And they're letting us know that. Now, you know that money is there. It's not all there, but it's been put aside where we get a little bit more, we can build another park.
It's set aside for a purpose.
If we start pulling away from there, we won't have much, that much longer, and we're going to start hearing from the people.
Well, certainly we want to build parks. You know, I think we're all on the same page there. We want to continue to build parks. I love our parks and our trails, and yes, we need to provide for them. Hopefully, our economy here, if we do the right things, will give us an advantage to help us be able to improve the revenue for to do all this without raising any rates. We have the opportunity this summer, this lake where we hadn't before. We've got a way to do this. Let's call it an experiment. You don't have to worry about all the other locations. You don't have to worry about coming years. We have the swimming seasons approaching quickly. Surely, we can give this an opportunity to put lifeguards there.
People can't keep affording these experiments. I mean, this is, let's keep it simple. There is money in a fund that is allocated for a purpose. The purpose is to build, maintain, and operate 35 parks that were approved by those voters.
And
that is the symbol.
25 now.
Thus, we have 10 parks to build. So that money that is in that bank is already allocated. It's already identified for the purpose that the voters intended. That's what it's there for. So to pull away from that is to undermine the will of the voters.
And I can't imagine you would want to do that. So we can't do it.
As stewards, we certainly want to do what is the most advantageous for the citizens, serve the citizens better. I can't imagine serving the citizens better than providing safety at Flying Line Pond. So I would ask you, please, for a second vote.
I would rather give you a light or a road patrol guard to cross the street. I'm afraid that we're going to put it there and take it away later.
And you could take it away later. For this summer, just simply to put lifeguards at Klein Lane Pond without drawing from the general fund from this fund that is set up for operation of these parks, and this being one of them.
Okay. Cougar Creek and one other park that's sitting waiting to be developed. And we heard it yesterday. Yesterday we heard.
Well, why don't we couple this with, if we have $6 million sitting in there, there must be some of these projects that have been partway through the process that would allow us to be able to pick at least one of those and finish it off. Build that second, that at least one additional park. If we take these one at a time, we can actually increment our way toward our total 35. Is there one potential candidate park that we can finish off so that we can do these two things, Flying Line lifeguards and finish off a park? I'd like to be able to do both.
It would be my recommendation, and the position we had taken previously, and my recommendation is that we have deferred park construction until the levy is restored, because I don't know how long it's going to be coming in at half what we need. I mean, we have $6 million now, but we're going to eat $1.5 million of the reserve this year just to provide maintenance and operations of those parks. As soon as we get back up to the 3.1 million, I'm going to be the first one to say, let's take some of these reserves and start building parks again. But I don't think it's prudent, because we experienced in 2009 the partial closure of some parks and the consequences there, which is far greater. I'd rather not build something and then have to close it if we don't have the money. And we're not guaranteed that we're going to have the levy amount restored in 1 or 2 years.
Well, why don't we do this then? Why don't we continue to do some more homework between now and next board time? I'll find out from our budget office, from our accounting, our finance office, what is the history, what is the income and the outgo for that fund. And also we can take a look, if you could bring the potential candidates for building parks to see if there'd be one of them that we could actually complete and see how much would that cost. In other words, just bring it back.
He's already done that. He's the manager of that fund. We know what those building costs are. And his plan was approved in the budget that is approved by the board.
And this was over the course of many austerity measures through horrible economic times. And now is not the time to just start spending for what may be seen as incredibly important, but measures that have not been vetted and that ultimately are not for the not the purpose of the funds that were created. I mean, just because there's a little money in the bank doesn't mean you should spend it. I mean, we have money in the bank because we need it to do what's necessary for the citizens and to fulfill our obligations to them. So just because other boards have put money in the bank, it isn't there for you to spend. It's there because it's necessary. So I'm not looking at coming back next week and authorizing the spending of $120,000 of funds that have already been designated by the voters for specific activities.
Okay, go ahead, Tom.
Let me ask you a question. We're going to need $1.5 million this year. for the maintenance and operation of the parks for the summer. Is that what I understand?
No, it's right around $3 million.
Oh, we need $3 million.
But because what we received in levy was 1.7 instead of the 3.1, the yeah. difference is what we're dipping into the reserves in, and we might have to dip into the reserves.
You're calling the reserves the money.
That's $6 million
to build the parks.
Yeah.
So and of that reserves, we're using that for maintenance and operation also.
Of those 25 parks.
Of the 25
yeah, because
parks.
That fund was specifically identified to do maintenance and operations, right, but right. we're allowed to do construction right. with the excess amount.
So, how much is that going to cost this year? Where I'm going with this is that, is there a part that we can develop this year and do our maintenance and operation and still have enough reserve for ongoing maintenance and operation for the rest of the year?
Oh, for the year, fine. What I'm worried about is how soon the levy amount restores back to where it was.
For a while.
And so what ends up happening is that we're going to need it to fully fund operations this year. We're going to need it for next year. We're going to need it for years to come. And I couldn't recommend that we spend any of it on capital until we restored the full levy amount.
So we have about $3 million a year coming in?
Yes. No. We have about 1.7. We're up at 3.1. We're down, you know, 1.4, 1.5.
Because this is the lowest level taxing district, so it got capped. It hit the cap on the levy rate, and so it didn't actually even hit the mark of what it was before. It got cut. It's that dangerous point of where you hit that rate cap, and they were the first one to get hit.
So are we going to be able to restore our maintenance operation over the next 3 years at the level that we have money coming in today?
No, we're not. Especially because, as I said earlier, we're maintaining parks that were never part of the program. It was always assumed that we have 35 new ones, but Klein Line, Salmon Creek Trail, Phillida, Orchards, a whole bunch of them were previously maintained by general fund.
I knew we should have built those trails.
So, how much does it cost to build a park, Pete?
Well, it depends on a neighborhood park.
3 to 9 million.
Is 600 to a million, depending upon the size and complexity. The community parks, of which we've got two to build, are in the $3 to $5 million that we have left.
So I get it that I don't have a second vote today. Our decisions are only as good as the information it's based on. I don't have the information, so I will continue to gather information between now and next week.
I can support it. I'd like to see that come back and have a little bit more of a clear explanation as to what we're bringing in, what our operation and maintenance is doing, and are we truly declining in that fund, or are we stable? And what I'm picturing, if we're stable, then I guess I'd like to build a park, but if I can't build a park, it's a fair of operation and maintenance. It's going to override me, then that would give the certification not to do it.
If that's what you want, I can provide that for you. I would recommend, because my finance manager has more access to it than the budget office does.
Okay.
In fact, the budget office would just call us for that information. So
yeah.
I'll put it together.
You're talking about Lori Pierce?
So I can see the picture.
Sounds good. All right, so we'll get information next week.
Yeah, and so I'd like to be able to see the trend of the outgo versus the income and separate that into what would be for capital, which would be for design access, and what would be for operation and maintenance, and also like be able to see when it comes to the potential parks, what could be built, potentially one park, so we can increment our way so that we end up with lifeguards and a park and sustainable. I don't have enough information to sort that out right now, so I will find out, come back.
And bring us the original information from the MPD levy, please, as far as what the purpose of it was, because there's history to that would be good for Commissioner Madore to get up to speed on.
Absolutely.
All right, so that'll come back next week. We already talked about the Lieutenant Governor piece as far as getting information. Bronson, do you have information? Or
you don't need me to.
Well, I got the board director.
We haven't had our discussion yet.
I know, she was leaving me today over there. You got it?
So who's he responding to?
Because this gentleman is writing the Lieutenant Governor. The citizen is writing
the Lieutenant Governor. I would say that if we consider them to be valid questions that you feel like should be addressed in
this
your opinion, that you would not only answer them, but you would answer the Lieutenant Governor. You would answer us as well. Do you think it's worth that?
I don't think we're
going to get into...
The only weird part about that is that lots of people send, you know, so every time someone sends something to their senator or to their, I mean, to preemptively send something to the senator, say, well, I know you got a question about this, here's some answers for it. They ask the Lieutenant Governor for answers. If the Lieutenant Governor wants something from us, I assume he will ask. I mean, responding to the citizen directly makes perfect sense to me and saying, hey, understand you're looking to get an opinion from them. We have our opinion we got from our attorney. This is what they said on it. And responding directly to the citizen makes good sense to me. But I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I would think if we answer that, of course, we would like to know what those answers are. I want to get a copy of it. So if you feel like it's not appropriate to answer the question, then it's a...
It's not what I said. I said that it is appropriate to answer the questions, but not... to answer them and to respond directly to the citizen and give the information to us, you know, have Bronson give the information to us and the citizen, but to send something forward to the Lieutenant Governor, that's where it just falls apart.
So, and another part of it is that what part does it become a personnel issue?
Yeah.
Well, your judgment.
You're in a position to really handle what the issue.
Okay. You can just, I would assume we would just defer
to Bronson. Yeah. If it's a personnel issue, would it be handled at an executive session?
Personnel issues?
Yeah. Does this border on a personnel issue?
I don't think these questions are the type that would be executive session material. So what I'll do is I'll prepare a response to these points.
Okay.
I will give you that. I will certainly directly send this to the citizen. You know,
that's our rule.
If you think it's appropriate.
If it's appropriate, I'll forward it to the Lieutenant Governor about it.
All right. Thanks, Bronson. All right. So that's all we have for old business, new business. Commissioners. Commissioner Milbury. Yes, you do.
Last week was my first week as participating on the board of Washington State Association of Counties. And pretty much what it was is that we were starting off on a new year after session as to the direction we were going to go. It was kind of report back on them. Were they effective? What did we like to see? We did the sticky note thing with a whole bunch of different questions, policy and legislative things to program services, and we tried to identify those, go put those sticky notes around to narrow it down. And it really came out kind of good because it gave them some direction as to how they were doing and things of that nature. We talked about personnel issues with staff of WASAC and how do we retain those people after the great experience that they get through the research that they do for us and all the other counties. And one of the things that came up and came to question is that a lot of the staff that we have now are really enjoy what they do. They're really, really happy. But you know, that changes. Down the way, they'll say, you know what, somebody else has offered me a better job, got more money or more benefits. But what came about was there was a public disclosure request from WASAC. And WASAC says, we're not a government agency, so therefore I'm not going to respond to your public information. And they went to court, and the judge came back and said, because you're all elected officials, even though it's a private organization, you are a quasi-government body and therefore are subject to public disclosure law.
Makes sense.
And so we paid a few hundred dollars in a penalty, but more importantly is that we learned something that other boards that we sit on could be also that. So in that process, I said, in that case, in retention of our staff, they may qualify for PERS retirement system.
Chris, you said
sure.
For retention.
Oh, hi, Chris.
So they're looking into that now and saying, hey, the judge says we're part of the government, why can't we pay into this retirement? So it was a good introduction to it. I thought I'd have time to go golfing, even though I don't golf. But got there at 4:30 Wednesday, worked until 9 o'clock. Breakfast started at 7:45, meeting started at 8. We were still eating our dinner halfway through the first hour. And the following morning, we were back on at 7:45 for breakfast, 8 o'clock meeting. We did get dismissed around 8 o'clock, checked out, got home at 5 o'clock. Beautiful, beautiful country, a hellacious drive. And then a question. Will I be able to WASAC for my mileage?
So you can do it either way. WASAC will, I believe WASAC will reimburse you for something like that. But usually,
pay for board and room.
Yeah, historically, we, Clark County, has paid for, you know, our representative on the board. So for your travel, you should be able to get reimbursed through, because it's out of town travel.
Yeah,
get reimbursed through Clark County. Yeah,
okay.
we don't take reimbursement for anything in the county, but for out of county travel, we get reimbursed.
All right.
By our own. So yeah.
So thank God the next one's not up there.
That's in Yakima.
5 hours and 40 minutes.
Dude, it's right. The next one's going to be in Yakima for you and me.
It's a breeze in the Yakima.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So anything else?
All good stuff. That's all I have.
Cool. Commissioner?
Yes. Chris, is this an appropriate time for us to talk about the fee waiver?
Certainly.
Okay.
I've got that on my agenda too, Commissioner. So
great.
Just wrap it all in.
Yeah. Well, since he's a commissioner, maybe
his agenda. Wrap it all in.
Well, I'm just saying, I've got a thing that I put together on concerns and
so
questions.
So, Commissioner, what were your
things
questions? And then you staff however you want.
Well, just a quick status, just to make sure that we're on the same wavelength. We have a public hearing that's been advertised to consider this on May 28th. Is that right, Chris?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
But that has been stricken because, I mean, we spoke about this at the tail end of last week. We had to strike that because we couldn't make the 15-day notice requirement to the Planning Commission, so it was continued to have a Planning Commission hearing on June 6th, is my memory, the first Thursday in June, and the board will take this up again on June 11th. We'll take this matter up on the 11th. Because so that we can make our notice requirements for the PC and still give adequate time for you to get this.
So the question is, what is different? Because what we're really doing is we're modifying an existing fee waiver that was adopted in 2010 and then renewed in last year in May. Did we go through the public, the Planning Commission process back in both of those times as well?
Actually, no. I will tell you that we raised the issue about going to the Planning Commission and amending our capital facilities plan, but not unlike now, there was the same issue, We had an issue with trying to create jobs and job opportunities and recognizing it then, we had an even higher unemployment rate. And the legal analysis that I did on behalf of our office was based on a couple of things. First, we acknowledged that at the original, that this was going to be, when this was first noticed, that it was 15 jobs, and as a result of the public hearing, it was reduced to 10. Originally, there was some discussion that these would be public, or these would be family wage jobs, and then we decided, because of the need to get jobs moving for the public, that it was a jobs requirement. In addition to that, there was a two-year requirement. So from our office's perspective, there were a couple things that came into play. Number one, and because it had a two-year requirement that you hire new FTEs, we wouldn't know when we first approved this how many would actually hire 10 and keep 10 for the full two-year period. So we wouldn't know what the budget impact was. Number two, that it was somewhat speculative about how many of these projects we'd have come through. And given all of that, we concluded that the change in our capital facilities plan would be small enough. We concluded it was de minimis, and therefore we could go forward without an actual capital facilities amendment. So we did not amend the capital facilities plan for that first jobs bill. This change is somewhat substantially different because to be entitled to a fee and a TIF waiver, the project only has to be completed. They have to finish site plan approval, and that first phase of fees would be waived, and they have to get building permits for certain projects, and some they only have to get final site plan to be have TIFs that waived. So depending on the nature of the development, they'll be waived as soon as they complete, whether they start a construction or start hiring people or how long they hire those people. So the impact on the county will be immediate. It's far more dramatic because there's no minimum number of employees required. And so given all of that and the magnitude of the expense, then our office came to the conclusion there's no way you can call that de minimis. And therefore, we had to go through the full process of amending our capital facilities plan and changing the source of funding, which we're in place with. We have a work session coming up tomorrow with the Planning Commission. We have the public hearing advertised and scheduled for June 6th, and then it'll come to you on the 11th following that hearing.
Keep in mind that we're not waiving any fees except for the business development.
Correct.
Do we know how much we have budgeted for that was projected in the budget to come in to four TIFs for this biennium? Do we know that?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Because the question is, if the residential permits continue on the pace that they are, they're looking pretty good. If that amount is equaling or exceeding the projected revenue for TIFs, doesn't that solve the problem?
No.
Why, the CFP is first of all, the CFP is a six-year document. It's not a biennial document. So,
yes,
so as such, you don't just look at what's coming into the next biennium. You have to look at what are the potential waivers within that six-year plan that you're going to have to actually lower the CFP, lower the overall cost of the plan in that six-year time frame.
Well, we're not lowering the cost of the plan. The plan will continue. So it's not really lowering the cost of anything. It continues the same infrastructure building. All it's doing is changing the source of the funds. As I understand, the TIF fees were not, there was no separation or category. This is residential, this is business. There was just a total amount.
That's correct.
And the projected amount of revenue over the next 6 years was forecast. And the question is, where are we on that forecast? Because if that forecast is healthy and possibly exceeds what that projection was, haven't we already covered the base?
Okay.
Hold on. Marty.
So I'm pulling together some information on site plans that we've approved.
Seriously, long answers.
And I'm looking at some of the larger site plans that we've approved with either little building or no building on them. And one example is the largest one is Padden Employment Center, it's called. It's north of Costco on 88th Street. It's a very, very large site with two very large medical office buildings. If all of that developed in the next 6 years and we waive traffic impact fees, it's about $8.3 million on all of the projects, all of the buildings on that site plan. I don't know how much has been built to date. I don't know how much has been charged to date. But the two medical office buildings, the estimate on traffic impact fees was $4 million on that one site plan.
So, yes. Good
question. What's the time frame that you said that was?
The project was approved in 2009, north of Costco on 88th Street there. So that approved site plan is good for.
Haven't they already put in their transportation fee requirement, and part of that was the street that they cut
88th
through.
Street improvement.
The 88th Street improvement and the cut through. I guess it would be about 68th Street.
Yeah, they broke at Padden Parkway, right in, right out.
Haven't they already paid their TIF?
No.
Those would be concurrency projects? Or what? Why are they doing?
What's that?
How much more do they owe on that? But I have the question because they've already paid the impact fee.
No, they're not.
You get the permit without collecting.
They don't pay the fee until you pull a building permit. You're assessed.
you know, what is the fee going to be? And when you actually build the medical office building, that's when you're charged the fee.
Right. So they have a credit then for what they've done.
Well, Bill, did you know, Bill?
This would be speculating. I would suspect they would have gotten a lot of credits for what they built along 88th Street.
And 68th Street.
Possibly. But when the TIF rates are calculated, there's a lot of projects in that TIF area that have to be financed both by public and private shares. So it isn't just related to the projects that, or the roads that touch their project or are a direct result of their development. There's other projects.
Okay, I'm gonna try to rein us back in a little bit here because we're gonna have a whole public hearing on this, and so for the purposes
of
board time and what we need to accomplish for that, go ahead, Commissioner.
So the number that you put out there doesn't take into consideration the credit that they probably already have.
Yeah,
and again, that all the total amount depends upon what they really put in there.
When they pull permits,
we really don't know what that number is.
But it's based on their site plan, what they intend to build.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm looking at is that, and then how we put this together, that we would have other triggers, well knowing that it's obvious that we have a right to terminate the program if we have such a huge build out like that by saying. And we've got our build out. We've already maxed out what we can afford to pay.
That's your call.
And we pulled the program out.
That's your call.
That is our call when we get to hearing. As far as, so we have a hearing that's good from legal notice, but you had a question specifically, and we kind of got sidetracked and talking with Chris about the legal notice requirements and when the hearing is scheduled for. Do you have questions about the hearing date, or is there additional information you're looking for? Because
no, I basically want to give notice to make sure that the original communication that we had, because the last time we all talked about this, the path forward was to have the hearing on the 28th to consider this resolution. Between now and next week, I'm going to continue to do homework, work with the staff, make sure I'm well informed, and potentially come up with whatever amendments may be necessary that may not trigger this extra process. Find out what we can do to get Clark County back to work as soon as possible. So I got some homework to do between now and then, because sometimes when you try to get too much done all at once, you end up making it too big of a process and it gets dragged out and you end up going through, it just takes too long. I like people to do what we can do to get done what can be done on the 28th. So I'll just explore the process between now and then. So the reason I say that is I want to make sure that there's not an assumption that we're not going to do anything on the 28th.
So the assumption is that we're going to do whatever we need to do legally, and we're going to listen to our lawyers who tell us what that is.
Absolutely.
And so our lawyer is telling us the 11th.
For TIFs.
I canceled.
For TIFs.
Correct.
Okay. So our lawyer is saying the 11th for TIFs. So if you don't want to do TIFs, you want to do something else on the 28th, you know, look into that and then come back to us next week on it. But the people, the citizens, need to have notice as to when they're going to be heard on these issues, and we can't be playing hide the ball or move the ball on them. So we've got to get it locked in, and if it's not going to be the 28th, we need to let people know. If it is going to be the 28th, we've got to let people know, but we've got to get that locked down.
So we could do address the fee holiday, but not the TIF?
The development fees and that aspect of it, yes.
We could do that.
We would have to re-notice that.
Well, the question is, Chris, we gave notice back last week sometime of what we were going to do on the 28th, and I would, whether or not we have the legal freedom to do whatever that is between now and then, I certainly respect your opinion. I will certainly follow whatever the process is. That's not ever in question.
So he just gave it to you. So what's the issue?
There's homework to do between now and then. There are other considerations to see what can be done in order to provide some measure forward, and we don't want to restrict ourselves from the freedom. We can always do less than what we announce, but we can't do more than we announce.
You are a fortune cookie, man. You got to be like it's so.
So I'm just what leaving it like it, like we originally noticed it. On the 28th, we'll be considering a fee resolution.
We cannot consider TIFs on the 28th legally. That's what our lawyer just said.
Can I have 30 seconds?
Yes.
30 seconds. I canceled, or I directed staff, your staff, to cancel the hearing set for the 28th because the notice wasn't legal. And so the 28th is off. Now it can be put back on, but it almost has to be done immediately, and you have to split the two ordinances apart if that's what you choose. But the TIF ordinance can't legally be taken off right now.
It's 2 weeks. Okay. It's a 2 week difference, so
you'd have to split it in order to have it on the 28th.
Well, the idea is to allow us the flexibility to consider what can be done on the 28th. Did we pull back the notice that before it went out?
We published it, a notice canceling the 28th hearing so that public didn't show up and have nothing happen.
No, well, help me understand.
Sure.
I assume that the notice goes to the newspaper.
Correct.
And the newspaper prints it. And I wonder if that, and then we sent a notice to the newspaper.
Canceling.
To say cancel it?
Yes.
So the question, has the newspaper published it, and then has the newspaper canceled it?
Yes. I think it did both of those things.
Okay.
In fact, I'm almost certain it did.
Then what I would, if we have time between now and then, that we would give the notice, the public notice, that would allow us the flexibility of having a public hearing to consider whatever is legal for us to be able to consider at that original date.
But we have to be more specific. Do you?
And
you have to tell me what the
notice. Consider fee waivers for permits, as well as to consider fee waivers for the TIFs.
Okay.
And
nope.
the
cool.
Less fortune cookie. We're trying to help, man. But it's
I don't interrupt.
What's going on?
I
would love to not, but we got to keep moving.
This is important. It's worth its time. Okay. What we're not committing ourselves to do is to vote on this issue, on the TIFs on that day. What we're doing is we're giving ourselves the freedom that if we are legally able to do on that day, that we have the notice and we can consider it, and yet we can, if we discover that we don't have the freedom, then of course we won't.
We discovered it. The lawyer said we don't have freedom to hear the TIFs until the 11th. We did, and he answered it three times, and you keep going back to fortune cookie.
I understand what you're saying. It's good for discussion. We can't take action on it.
You can't discuss it. You have to go through the legal process for TIF.
Well, the ordinance talks about the matter going to the Planning Commission before you take it up. Whether you have it as some kind of an informal work session, I can't answer right now because I don't know that's not done. I mean, that's not part of the Planning Commission process.
Well, that's not what I'm asking. I'm just asking if we do, let's say, if it requires that we break the resolution into two resolutions, then we could give public notice that would allow us the flexibility to have the hearing on both of those. So the public is noticed that we're considering both of these issues, and worst case, we get there and we discover that legally we can't really vote on it or even have any hearing on it on that day for the TIFs, and of course we would comply, we wouldn't do that. But if we between now and then work to find what flexible ways we can do or restrict things down, because we were able to do it last year, we were able to do it in 2010, there are possible steps that we can take, and we can take some measure in that direction that would affect the TIFs and would affect the permits. That's all I'm trying to do, is allow us to be able to have the flexibility to take whatever action we can on the 28th. Is that kosher?
I need two votes, and we'll have to get notice out immediately.
Question. Is it possible
to take
that
up
that we get enough different information to take up the TIF issue?
On the 28th.
No.
I don't see any way that you can legally act on the TIF resolution on the 28th.
Well, break it into you're thinking of the resolution as originally, right now it was triggered beyond some threshold. If we're to pull that back and say we're below this threshold, in other words, we'll offer some amendments that will do something on a smaller scale between now and then, is that reasonable?
I can't answer that because I don't know what it is. Without, I don't have enough information to give you a legal answer, to be honest.
And the citizens have to know what they're actually going to be testifying on. So to be changing it up to the date of the hearing to try to get something that just slides under the bar of it gives them no opportunity to actually see what is being proposed.
That. I'm not suggesting that. There'll be that's more than 2 weeks away. And opportunity for us to be able to scale it back like it was last year.
It's a two-week difference. All I think they're saying is if you want to do two notices now and do one for the 28th that says we're going to be discussing and deliberating on the fee waivers associated with development fees and that aspect of it. Hold on. You're interrupting me and you said you don't interrupt. The second piece of it is on the 11th then, and you notice them both now and you say, look, we're going to do this part on the 28th, and then on the 11th, we're going to do the TIF because we have a legal process we have to follow. You can put both of those out right now to give people the understanding of it. It's a two-week difference in time, but it makes a world of difference, both legally and from the standpoint of giving people certainty as to what they will be coming in to speak to and that we will be hearing from them on, and thus what we're deliberating on. Yeah.
You're talking about redoing the approach on TIF to maybe not waiver full TIF that might make it go underneath that and qualify it. So if you waive, if he goes back and says, I'm not going to, we're not going to ask for a full waiver of TIF, we're going to come back and ask for something other than a full waiver of TIF, does that still have to wait?
Yes. Well, again, if otherwise it remains the same, the answer is yes, it would have to wait. But even if we go forward, the notice we need 10 days, a minimum of 10 days. And to get it published requires a few days advance notice to the Columbian. And so to be able to get, we have to have the notice drafted in whatever format we come up with and get it to the Columbian requires getting it to them like.
Let's break it down into two parts. The first part is the fee waiver resolution that does not cover the TIFs.
Correct.
We do need to give public notice for a hearing for that, right?
10 days.
Have we already done that?
Not for the 20th. We had for the 28th, but now it's currently scheduled to go forward on the 11th with everything, or as a one unified ordinance.
Okay. Then if we pull the TIF part out of it, then we could. We could handle that on the 28th.
Yes.
Right. The reason I'm thinking that is that, you know, we're not talking about just a 2 week difference there. When I talked with the department that schedules the planning commission, they indicated it takes typically 30 days after their meeting for them to approve their minutes, be able to actually get the information from them. So they would not get what they need in order if they have the hearing on the 6th, for us to be able to have what we need and have the staff and have us all have plenty of information to have the hearing on the 11th.
What you're talking about, we talked about this already, what you're talking about is the fact that they would wait for their minutes to be approved. We don't have to wait for the planning commission. You don't have to wait as a board for the planning commission minutes to be approved. He'll be at the meeting. Marty will be at the meeting. Oliver will be at the meeting.
We'll have a video.
You'll know. Don't have to wait for 35 minutes.
So then you walk away with it. That
I want to make sure that on any of these things, whatever process we take, that if the normal process is you really need to have approved minutes, or it can be challenged, that we're not somehow pushing the limits on something.
We didn't use it. No, there's not a particular. There's nothing in 3563 that requires you to have approved minutes before you take up a matter. You have to have a recommendation from them. We'll even have more than they had at the time the statute was written because you can watch the videotape.
As I told you when we discussed this, what the previous board demanded was when there, and it was mostly in the time when you were doing. Land use appeals, is that the Planning Commission minutes approved had to be in the record because they were acting, you, the board, were acting as a quasi-judicial board in land use here.
And we know
that's where
we
that came from, and that's probably why they got it mixed up.
Okay.
Because they're habitually doing that now. They have to have approved minutes for everything to be with the board. Well, they don't do that. You don't do that anymore.
Yeah, Commissioner, I'm sorry. If so I may, before you jump back in, Axel had something he wanted to add.
So I handed out a sheet. We got many, many comments on this issue at the public hearing last Tuesday. Wednesday, you gave us direction to push forward the approved resolution to start with, and then you all were going to amend that resolution offer amendments up to the point. I tried to compile on one sheet the major themes of questions and concerns we received from the comments so that you could use them in your amendment writing also, so as a staff we can start trying to come up with answers to the questions. Some of them are fairly complex. Some of them we already have answers for. The point I want to make in regard to this conversation is, Commissioner, I know this is a priority, but some of the issues specifically, I think, as a staff around the process and mechanics for implementing the TIF waiver we're struggling with at staff level. Bill's here. I don't want to get into a long discussion about that. We can do that next week or whatever. But with the TIF credit program and with backfilling with road fund into the TIF account, Mark Gassaway was here. He had to leave. We're just running into some complex problems that we'll probably need till the 11th to have clear answers for you anyway. So that, in terms of my recommendation, whether it's legally noticed correctly or not, I just think some of these things, they're harder to answer than maybe we anticipated and we're struggling with them. So we'll need till the 11th, especially on the TIF side, to get the staff work done.
I didn't know that, and I thank you for letting me know that, because I want to make sure that whatever process we go through, we follow it so that it's beyond challenge, that it's fully legal, that we haven't tried to push anything beyond what the normal process would be, that staff is comfortable with the time frames. I thought the last, I wasn't clear that we could actually get everything done by the 11th. So it looks like we can get the questions answered, plenty of information on the 11th, and there was really the capital facilities. There's something has to do with amending that as well?
Correct. That's what the Planning Commission will be considering tomorrow.
Okay, so, and is there anything else that we need to be able to do to have the full freedom on June 11 to consider vote on this issue, on this weekly waiver resolution, or for us to be able to consider reasonable amendments to it?
I can't answer that in any fast way. There are some things that you and I should talk about in anticipation, and the easiest way to do that would be to handle it individually.
I welcome that. I just want to make sure that we don't show up on the 11th and then we discover we should have done something, scheduled something, and somehow we can't act. So I'm asking you, please inform me if there's something that needs to be done that somehow would restrict our freedom to be able to act on the 11th.
And staff's working on that and on some of the making sure that they're the issues that are being generated, that they're dealing with those. And I know Axel's been working with our staff to make sure that they have the questions answered so that we can take action on the 11th.
All right. And all relevant notices are either in process of being published or published.
Great. They actually have all been published.
Okay, good.
Two for the PC, here the work session and the hearing, and then the hearing on the 11th.
Okay. Well, I was...
We need to do a budget amendment.
Hold on. The commissioner was speaking.
You can answer the question.
Button in my mouth.
No, it's an answered question already.
Because there's a fourth notice possible for a supplemental budget. Because
that's already been done.
We already dealt with that.
Bob Stevens.
It has not.
Oh.
We'll talk to Bob about that.
Okay, I will.
Okay, so you're the owner of all the notices, and you got it. So whatever needs to be done.
So we're on for the 28th?
Nothing's on the
28th. You won't put everything on.
Is that right, Chris? Nothing's on the 28th?
No, not currently.
Only on the 11th.
You could on the fee holiday, but not the TIF. You want to put it all together.
Well, it sounds like...
My recommendation is keep it together, keep it simple, do it on the 11th, and we will try as hard as we can to have these... Okay. Questions answered. Like I said, the TIF questions are becoming very complex, and we're going to need that amount of time to figure out mechanically how to do it. So just keep it all. That's my recommendation. Keep it all together on the 11th.
Do I need the same kind of a time frame notice to new resolution on freeholders?
No.
Oh, okay.
Because it doesn't have to go to the Planning Commission for that. We do need to get the timeline working backwards for it and get the notices ready. No question. No question about it.
Everything will be in place.
It was a long road. The 11th. I think we're at the 11th.
It will come.
All right. Did you have anything else, Commissioner?
No, sir.
All right. I had one thing, and it relates a little bit to this. Just a reminder to the board more than anything. We agreed that the resolution itself would remain pure until the hearing, and we would amend it at the hearing. There would be no changes. Reminder to the board, I have two documented instances, and I don't want to see more, and I know that there were a couple of others, of staff being put in the awkward space of being called for a second vote on issues. A reminder that it is a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. It was part of our primer that we got when we did it in February, where it specifically... But hold on. Where was it? Okay, so a consensus building process that equates to decision making falls under the Act, under the Open Public Meetings Act. For example, if two commissioners use telephone calls to discuss or resolve an issue, the member's conduct is susceptible to round the horn decision making, which achieves the same effect as if the board met publicly and formally cast votes. Round the horn process violates the Open Public Meetings Act. So you can't do it. Don't put staff in the awkward space of saying call for a second vote. It is a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. So prospectively, looking forward, please do not, none of us say, hey, if staff says you need a second vote for that, we have public noticed meetings on Tuesdays and Wednesdays where we can discuss it legally. Outside of Tuesday and Wednesday, can't do it.
What you're saying is staff said, I can't do that, I need a second vote? Or
if staff says, okay, I need policy, I need direction from the board on this, and we're outside of a meeting, and they say, well, I'm going to need direction from the board on this, then that's something that would require, two votes, and it has happened...
Can you elaborate? I have no idea what you're talking about.
So you have done it at least once with Bill and once with Axel, where they've said, I'm going to need a second vote for that commissioner.
Can you elaborate?
When you asked me to call Commissioner Melke to get a second vote for Anna to move in to her office, you specifically asked me to call Commissioner Melke, and I did. And got a second vote.
That's a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. And I just... It was part of our primer, but we gotta be tight to
that. Staff has done that a whole lot,
and we can't put staff in that position.
Many times I've gone to staff and requested something, and they said, "Well, I can't do that unless you have a second vote."
Right. And the next time you can legally get a second vote is next on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, because those are the publicly noticed meetings.
Okay.
We've been doing it.
We delegate the administrative authority.
Yeah.
We delegate the administrative authority to our staff. So in between our meetings, they're authorized to do their work. And then when we come back for our meetings, those items that we need to discuss and get a second vote, that's when it happens.
Yeah. Good point. Because over those years, I've been working with staff and saying, well, can we do it this way? And they would say, I've gone as far as I can go. I think that you probably have control. So at that time, I need to bring it up at a public meeting.
And that's for all of us.
Okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
And board time is usually the best time to do that, because this is where you meet with all of your staff.
Yeah. Good understanding.
And going back to Anna, we had multiple discussions in board time, and some of those discussions led to if one of us wasn't there, that there would be the follow-up would be to get the second vote by making it by Bill Barron getting a second vote.
It can't. That's a violation.
No, we agreed during the board time that he would call afterwards and get the second vote to discuss it.
I don't believe that we agreed to that, but if there was some agreement, that's a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act.
I assume that the reason that you brought that up, I assume that you were talking about the resolution, what is in front of us here. That's what I thought you were going to give. Is there an example that's current that you're talking about?
Well, there were two examples that I had from staff, and we can't have any more of it. And so I don't want to see
that moving forward. I
just did. There's one. Axel had another example.
Well, the only time I checked in with Commissioner Mielke when we took one component we were working together out of, but it was unclear at that time for me if we were just working on Commissioner Medora's version, which is the now current version, or if we were working from the one that was agreed to out of the few board times ago. Actually, it's been many board times ago now. So what happened in that instance is we began working on parallel resolutions. It's fine because we took them both to the hearing. We presented them both at the hearing.
But
so
it put staff in an awkward space because, again, a consensus-building process around the board decision-making violates the Open Public Meetings Act. So it's putting them in an awkward space that we cannot do. Legally, state law.
Now, let me address that, because what I don't want to happen here is that we are accused of colluding or bypassing the process or something like that, because that's absolutely not what is happening here. And in fact, I had a conversation with Chris Horn about this last week to ensure that as I walk through the process of developing this resolution,
right.
I work with staff.
That's great.
And that the same staff was working with you and with me, and the question is, who owns the, you know, what about the changes? So the freedom and the resolution that's already taken care of is that we can each develop our version of the resolution, we can each develop our version of the amendments, and the staff doesn't have to figure out, well, do I have to check with them on this because you got one document. The resolution that's already in place is we have separate documents, and that's already in place. So there is no collusion going on.
No.
There's nobody asking to get a second vote for any of this stuff. So are we clear on that?
I am. Yeah.
Okay, well, you're the one that brought it up.
And I brought it up because of two examples that were 100% clear. And so, I thought they were 100% clear. There were two very specific examples that were violations, and we can't have more of it. So as far as the resolution goes, totally agree. We all have we all have the right and the freedom to work individually with staff. What we don't have the right to do is to build consensus or to reach decisions outside of a public meeting that has been duly noticed. So, and I'm not saying it has happened in this response. I'm simply saying moving forward, we cannot do that on anything. Can't do it.
The only time it's confusing.
And I, as the chair, am bringing that up because, you know, I've been here the longest, and yeah. I feel like we need to get this locked down.
The only time it's confusing is with if we are working on a document or something that's for the whole board or for an individual commissioner. So what's really helpful for staff is at this meeting each week, if you're going to allow Commissioner Medora to work on a collective document for the board,
right.
Make that very clear and say he has the authority to make changes to the document, work with staff, and then bring it back, or no, this is not a collective document. This will all go our own way like we are right now. Everybody right now is going to bring their own amendments. So just as long as it's clear, I think that's the only time it gets confusing is it a collective document or isn't it?
Exactly.
Or policy.
It's very clear. In fact, the only way that we can work on something, even if it be in the same direction, the same idea in implementing a resolution, we cannot work on the same document. We have to be separate documents. That resolves everything. Otherwise, it is a form of colluding, and we can't let that happen.
Agreed.
So, Commissioner, I want to make sure that we don't advance some idea that we're colluding or getting second votes behind the scenes here. And just as an example, the notice that was to go out, it was put the public comment, to schedule the public comment for this May 7th meeting. I work with with Rebecca, our clerk, to put that there. You changed it as the commissioner. I got word of that.
I didn't change it. You attempted to change it. It was already set.
She had already changed it. So I had it scheduled.
She had not already changed it, but go ahead.
I had it scheduled with her. I got word later that day that you changed it back. I approached Bill Barron. He indicated that we need to be able to get this somehow resolved. I asked him, how do we resolve it? So we brought in Chris Horn. We talked about it. The rules were that the chairman can set that agenda, the sequence. So you push the public comment to the middle. So we ended up switching it out there in front of everybody. It made everybody upset. But that process of resolving that was meeting with Chris Horn and Bill Barron so that we honored that two-vote process there. We couldn't get a second vote.
Right. You actually tried to get me on the phone, sitting in Bill Barron's office, tried to get me to get on the phone with you so you could discuss it, and I said it was inappropriate to discuss it out of the public meeting. Remember that? Do you remember that? I'm asking you a specific question. Are you going to answer it?
Let's keep it friendly. Okay?
I'm trying, but you tried to change the agenda. You didn't have authority to change the agenda. It was not changed, and so thus it was not changed back. You then sought guidance on how to do it appropriately, which you did. You did it appropriately in the meeting by suspending the rules and doing it. You did it appropriately in the meeting. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The reason I bring it is because with the resolution of that, and I'm so thankful for Chris Horn, I'm so thankful that if there be some question about this, we call Chris with his cape and he comes and advises us. And he did on that day, so it was resolved in a way that was clear. And so I just want to make sure that we're clean. We're not accused of colluding behind the scenes, and we have we've already defined how we move forward in a way that is that it doesn't confuse or conflict staff.
I feel like the lone ghost that was on the outside and yet part of it.
Exactly.
I didn't know all this was going on in the meantime, and when I tried to talk to you, you said we can't discuss that here. We have to discuss it out there. And I thought, I gotta go tell Steve. I don't want to blindside him.
I must have learned it from me when I told him we couldn't talk about it when I was on the phone.
But no, he got it from Chris.
When Chris was in Bill's office and they were sitting
there. We did it right.
And yes. Chris was there.
There were a couple all I'm saying is there were a couple of specific instances and we need to be tight about that moving forward. That's all I said.
We are really on the same page here.
Perfect. Then great. Then no need to go.
Just to be clear, the reason that I acted the way I did is because we used to have, under Kurt Wyrie, the board was literally in session all the time, 5 days a week, from 8 to 5. That he wrote the code that way, so basically commissioners could have the ability to.
That's the problem, right?
Because it was a code. It's no
it doesn't work,
code.
Right?
But the statute says you have to have by ordinance when you're in session, and so we put it in the county code. I mean, that was the rationale.
Well,
I know it's really a disadvantage not being able to talk to each other because there's a lot that I don't understand. That I can, get somebody what I understand. I know it's really a disadvantage.
It is one of the problems with our form of government. It's one of the challenges with our form of government.
So if we had 5 commissioners, we could do it. Or why can't we go back and do it the way we did it, you guys did it before?
Probably not appropriate.
It might be
with the way the Open Meetings Act has been the case law for Open Meetings Act, it's probably not appropriate. That was back in the 70s.
So, Chris, as you advise us, the only way that we can really talk to each other about county business is during a published county meeting, right?
Yeah.
Public meeting.
Okay, cool. We're all on the same page. That's all I have. And it is 5:10, so the rest of the staff, burning, pressing issue that you have to get out at 5:10 p.m. on Wednesday. Seriously, Bill.
Director of Environmental Services asked me if he could hire his 4 vacant positions that you've been holding.
that's what we've been holding it for.
That was the reasoning for the holding was to get things solidified within the department. So,
Yes, and I respect the.
I thought there was 2.
4.
Each director to be able to staff their team.
We're good. Please thank Don for bringing those forward.
Request work for sessions, CRC Community Forum. facilitated gathering at the event center, date to be determined. You asked for that. Capel, this is on the list for you to approve.
Can we bring that back next week? After you had a chance. As far as that one, because that's something that talked with Commissioner Medora about.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Land acquisition process. If you remember during the parks thing, we said you wanted to see the land acquisition process for parks land.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We're ready to do that.
Great.
Event center contract authority. I think we wanted to look a little closer at how the event center contracts for their acts and their stuff. If you remember the rave thing came up, the sheriff didn't like. Gasaway and Scullion, the fiscal transparency, we want to talk about the new financial transparency we have. Doug Lasher wants us to review the county debt policy. My finance team has reviewed a debt policy. Linda Babe wants to talk about the purchase card audit.
Great.
And Axel wants to talk about reschedule the quiet zone. And Marty wants to talk about the TIP work session. TIP work session of March 27th to address broader issues of level of service and concurrency.
Great.
That's a follow-up.
Okay. That's a forecast of what's to come.
Okay. I know.
Okay, I'll bring one back.
All right. That's it?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen, ladies, people, citizens.
Adjourn.